Christina.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share... Oh, is it your turn now?
We're switching because it's a season again?
Maybe, because that's what we did before.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Or do we say it together? Decisions.
It's a whole new season.
Is it spontaneous? It's a whole new show. Whoever wants to.
Oh.
It's a fight.
So often
it's
is.
It's a fight to see who says it first.
Oh, yep, that's right. We're back. And there's a whole lot to get to. This is a brand new season. The first season premiere, though, to not be a double length, like feature length television event.
Yeah.
And you can tell because the first, like, 6 minutes is an incredibly dense monologue from our new star.
There's so much.
Because they have got to squeeze that information in.
We had to, like, pause it to, like, process.
Because there's no better way to say it than the way he says it, so I mean, might as well just, like, transcribe.
Yeah.
Which always feels silly in a show like this.
A little bit.
But before we get to that, I want to do basically the same thing, but for the real world.
Okay.
So, our season 3 premiere airs September 20th, 1995.
Oh, my God. And it, like, we're almost to the day. We just missed it.
We are very, very close at time of recording to the 30th anniversary of SeaQuest 2032, as it is retitled.
I knew that Friday felt good. It felt special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy 20th, dear.
Friday wasn't a 20th. I'm looking at my NSYNC calendar that suddenly, got wrong.
Sync, ironically.
It was right. It was correct. Uh-huh. And September's wrong. And I'm so confused.
To set the stage, the context of what September 20th, 1995
yes.
means, eBay, not yet contracted, the electronic bay is a few weeks old.
Is that what it stood for?
Was yes, and oh. still does.
Okay.
Yesterday, the 19th, the Unabomber's Manifesto was published in major newspapers.
Oh, man. Let me...
Tomorrow, the defense and prosecution will both rest their cases in the O.J. Simpson murder trial. Hackers and The Usual Suspects just hit theaters. And the number one song in America, according to the Billboard charts, is Gangsta's Paradise.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you were listening to?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was definitely listening to that.
You were big into LL Cool J?
No, I wasn't.
Good call, because that's a Coolio song. I thought I was going to get you.
No, I wasn't really into that when I was 7. I was a lot more into, like, Green Day.
Sure.
Or no, well...
Welcome to Gangsta's Paradise.
What, 1995?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not much of a...
People of the World, Spice Up Your Life, etc. That wasn't your thing?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
That's very gendered thinking on my part. I apologize.
It is. Yeah. I was not a Spice Girls fan.
Yeah, too English for you.
I never had a Spice Girls face. It was not my thing. I went for the boys more. I was all about the boys.
Same. So...
I mean, did I ever... So... Did I ever tell you my Unabomber story?
No! I don't think you have!
Okay, so, one time my family was driving up to Port Austin.
Uh-huh.
We had to detour
mm-hmm.
because there was, like, FBI SWAT team type crazy shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out later that it was connected... To the Unabomber.
Like the actual Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski.
Yes.
Not like a false positive
yeah.
suspect. Okay.
No, like it was like there was shit connected to him there in this random middle of nowhere cornfield in Michigan. There was like a little house and mm-hmm. they were investigating this house.
I know the Oklahoma City bomber had a Michigan ties.
Or maybe it was
ties.
That one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a bomber. There was a bomber.
Sure.
I was a child.
Yeah.
I know it had to do with something going explosion. Could have been that one.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought it was the Unabomber, but maybe it was the Oklahoma City bomber. Anyways, the FBI was there, and we had a detour, and we couldn't stop at the Amish place we like to stop to buy the peanut butter cookies, and I was really sad.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
They were really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, moving a little closer to home, Sequest has moved to Wednesday. It is the first show in the primetime block, NBC Wednesdays, and leads into Dateline NBC.
Okay.
So their competition now, instead of like the X-Files and Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, is the sixth season of 90210 over on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
While the other two networks are both showing pairs of sitcoms. The celebrity-based Bless This House and Dave's World on CBS.
I've never heard of those.
Yeah, for good reason. short-lived shows. Whereas comedian sitcoms over on ABC, that would be Ellen and their Drew Carey show.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's some competition.
Also, you will notice, if you watch the opening credits closely, some missing names.
Yes.
Mr. Steven Spielberg is no longer involved.
No.
He's not credited as executive producer. No. Neither is a showrunner up to this point, starting midway through season one, David J. Burke.
Nope, not there.
Burke has been replaced by Patrick Hasburg. Now, do you remember the first time Patrick Hasburg's name came up on Whiskers We Share Knowledge Regarding Sequest?
No.
It was when he wrote Whale Song. And all those times in Whale Song when we said, hey, doesn't this feel like ideas we'll be revisiting in season three?
Yeah.
Call that setup payoff. We call that long-term thinking.
Yeah.
Something Sequest doesn't do as well as we do with 30 years of hindsight about Sequest.
Yeah. So what were you doing in 1995?
Hot chicks.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was hanging out on farms. I was tending.
I was like, were you eating a lot of, like,
tending to the fowl.
Fried chicken?
Yeah, I was eating nuggets. That's what I mean by that.
It was the time of the Beanie Babies at McDonald's. So, yes, you probably were eating the nuggets to get the little Beanie Baby.
But this episode is not... But we are not here to talk about Spice World.
No.
We're here to talk about Sequest 2032, Season 3, Episode 1, Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
There's a transition for you. Written, of course, by Aldous Huxley. Wait, no, that's the other one. Written by Clifton Campbell.
Struggling here.
A little bit. I got a little confused.
Thinking the Spice Girls already exist.
Clifton Campbell is now also an executive producer, but recently for Sequest, he wrote Blindsided, Dreamweaver, and When We Dead Awaken.
Mm-hmm.
This is directed by Anson Williams, who directed Meltdown, Blindsided, and Splashdown. Yes, that does mean we are talking three Anson Williams episodes in a row.
He really loves directions.
Yeah. Meltdown, Splashdown,
Blindsided.
Oh, okay, yeah. Brave New World, where are the signs?
World.
I don't know.
World.
Okay, so there's a globe and there's a compass rose somewhere on there.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this episode, we start, we first off get a little bit of a recap, like an auto recap.
Two episodes in
thing,
a row.
You know?
Splashdown started with a previously on, and this starts with a previously on of Splashdown.
Yes. We end that with the final clip of the episode, which was Lucas and Dagwood in the boat, and Lucas promising that... you know, they'll find them and someday they'll get back to Earth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kind of like the, you know, hey, remember what happened? This is where we ended.
Yes, yes. And as we get into the action, we see that old-fashioned, very familiar season one, like, title case, giving us a location in the Melanesian Basin.
Yes.
And also, it's 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. And then we get voiceover from Hudson.
Voiceover from Captain Hudson, played by, of course, played by the one and only star of stage and screen, mostly screens.
Our best buddy.
Our personal acquaintance, Michael Ironside.
We hugged him. He's my personal acquaintance.
On his insistence, we hugged him.
Yeah, he made us hug him. I have friends I have never hugged, but he made me hug him. In a very nice, respectful way, not in, like, a creepy way.
He's a professional.
Yes.
There's photo evidence.
Yes.
Michael Ironside, let's again roll back the clock to 1995. So prolific, he had 7 credits that year alone.
Was Free Willy one of them?
No, that was 93.
Oh, okay.
Saying what all of these were may spoil future movie star minutes, but I will note that one of those credits was a regular role in ER's first season. He was in like the last 5 episodes of ER season 1. He was set to be a member of the cast, but then he got the offer to star in this show rather than be a supporting cast member on that show.
Oh, is that why he's so mad?
And switch, like, all right, NBC, I'll go to Florida. I'll helm your ship in character and figuratively out. In the meantime, ER got 11 Emmy nominations.
Jesus. Okay, I understand his bitterness about this show. Because...
complicated feelings.
He left ER. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, season 1 of ER is the season I know the least about.
Well, once you start to see Dr. Michael Ironside, you're running out of season 1. There's not a lot left.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever saw him. I had a very short couple seasons of ER that I watched, and then, like, none of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yes, he is narrating over establishing shots of this big, chunky sub.
Yes, it's a big... I don't know. It's very round. It's got a big belly.
It's a cargo hauler, is how it's described later. And yeah, it's... like, the scale is sold by, like, the curves that it's made of, its chunkiness, its stockiness. The two engines that are meant to be huge are dwarfed by the bulk of it. It is a plausible science fiction design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really cool. And you hear that classic gravel voice start the episode by saying, quote, "They say obsession is the cancer of mental illness, but if you ask me, anyone who can ignore his gut was never sane in the first place."
Intense.
It's intense! As this sub reaches a big underwater city, you see he has been undertaking a 10-year search for the lost deep submersible vehicle, SeaQuest.
Yes.
Time has passed because hats aren't as tall anymore.
No, they've really come down a bit.
Fashion has changed, and the hats don't look like you're trying to, like, scrape the top of doorways you walk through
anymore.
They
actually, like, fit on your head. They don't just sit on top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And so, through this scene of where we get a lot of cutbacks between him on the boat, and they're coming up to this colony, and they're gonna dock with this colony and stuff, where he's filling us in on what's happened in the past 10 years.
He is the narrator, but there's also little bits of, like, indiegesis talk between him and the people on his boat, including a Lieutenant Mars, who is played by Damon Jones, and went on from here to do a lot of, like, one-episode appearances on so many sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
He is now the voice of Marvin the Martian.
Huh!
We've also seen him previously as the bartender in When We Dead Awaken. The
yes!
Brody's mom is back.
Yes! Yeah. Oh, that's what... Oh. Yeah! Dang it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he looked familiar.
You remember the face of the bartender from Brody's Hot Mom?
Yes! I do remember it!
Well, in the 10-year sense, he's joined the Navy.
He's joined the Navy. Well, he was
there's no reason it couldn't be the same guy.
There is no reason.
There's no reason.
He was like, there's a few too many times that I saw dudes hook up with their moms. I need out of here. What has happened in the past 10 years is that following the economic summit of 2026...
It's right around the corner, folks.
The UEO lifted a ban on...
deregulation.
Yes, a deregulation. So, like, suddenly all these different basins and stuff were available for new colonies to spring up, and, like, it just happened left and right. And we get a shot of, like, look at this, the inside of this colony! And, you know, that looks really familiar.
This is the Nexus base. It is the seat of action for this episode. The way this episode is built is you have to know what happened to Sequest, you have to know what season 3 is about, and you really have to know Captain Hudson.
Yes.
But, like, fourth priority is an adventure story to build all, to be at the center of all of those.
Yes.
And that adventure story is about the Nexus colony.
Yes.
As played by the Seas Pavilion at Epcot Center.
Yes.
As it was known in 1995. The Living Yes. Seas Pavilion.
Yes. Oh my god, I love it so much.
In the time since, it has become a simple, honest aquarium with a veneer of Nemo and Friends theming.
Yeah, there's like a Finding Nemo ride that you can like do that takes you into the pavilion. But you can also just, like, walk through a door.
Yeah.
But then the theming stays through different areas.
But at the time, and therefore why it was so suitable for filming, is it was themed to a working sea base.
Yes.
And they fill this place with buggies and bikes and crowds.
The weirdest little, like, tiny little truck.
Yes, this teeny tiny electric truck.
Yes.
And they have a guy in the scuba diver tube, and that was a show. There would be several times a day they put a guy in the tube. They put a guy in the tube in recent months again.
Oh, really?
That's I read an article. I don't know how regular an event that is.
That's cool.
But they put a guy in the tube again. So that is the...
Just to celebrate the anniversary.
Of the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is our location. I wish there wasn't motion blur when the camera pans so I could like pause and read the wayfinding maps that they left in the shot, because I guess the idea is people in Nexus Colony will have to find their way around this underwater city. Okay, sure.
Yeah. There's not street signs.
Yeah.
And so the voiceover continues, where we are told that without Sequest, they were unable to control this explosion of colonies, and with that, all the like explosions of and corruption of like wealth and power that came, you know, led to people trying to take control.
This is a direct callback to the first episode, right? To the Nathan Bridger incident.
Mm-hmm.
This might even be named for a Shakespeare quote, because that was to be or not to be.
I see what you were going for now. I got it. Get the connection.
So where that was, this guy wants to deregulate the sea and Sequest is there to stop him. Sequest is gone. The UEO caved to people trying to deregulate the sea. Much like they did that time Lucas got kidnapped in a magician's hotel with a bunch of world leaders. And so many other episodes beside have been about this.
Yeah.
With the Sequest out of the way, it happened. And it kept happening for 10 years and things have got bad.
Yeah. So Hudson, like, could have retired, but instead they are paying him triple, offered him whatever ship he wants.
Only boat I wanted was missing.
Yeah. but he took command of this UEO supply hauler to do the search. And we find out that McGath still exists. He's still going strong as the Secretary General 10 years later.
Every other Secretary General has held the position for like 6 months top.
Yeah.
And this guy who's presided over the UEO as it crumbles and the world goes to hell. Like, oh yeah, 10 years.
Here. I'm not stressed at all.
Keep going.
This is fine.
Do we vote for this guy? I don't know. He's got my vote if that's how it works. So whatever.
I got Seems a cool. pension I'm hoping to cash in. Like. So then we learn about their greatest enemy.
Yes, there are new factions. One in particular, very important.
The Alliance of Macronesia, formerly New Australia. They are this high tech, like they control all the tech of the world type alliance that has just been like stretching their borders and taking over different places. And they are led by Alexander Bourne.
Alexander Bourne, who we will meet later. So this monologue is very, very dense. And I appreciate that it is laid over easy to digest, but meaningful visuals.
Yes.
Like, we see Hudson at work, and it's not complicated. Nothing he's doing is important, but you get this is a guy who's nose to the grindstone, no nonsense.
Yes.
We see that Nexus is very populated, and the population is very worried. We see, like, new attack sub designs. Attack subs are a big deal in this war 10, 12 years later.
Mm-hmm. We see, like, crazy-ass fancy speeders.
Yes.
It looks like Star Wars underwater.
It super does. Especially because Hudson now talks about how there's a trade embargo, but from where he's sitting, that's just a way to, that's just war under another name. This predicted the Phantom Menace. This came out years before episode one, The Phantom Menace.
It's so obvious to see who was fans of Sequest.
You think George was a big Sequest guy?
Yes.
You think he started watching because, you know, his friend Mark was in a couple?
Yeah.
And his first episode is this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. He was like, oh my God.
Wait, where'd Mark go? Why is he just in the previously on?
I thought he said he was in the show. He didn't miss that it was just a guest star appearance. It really threw him with the whole 2032 thing. Because we didn't talk about that. It's renamed. The show's renamed. I think we've talked about that before. But it's renamed. We officially have renamed the show.
And so as he is in reality ordering his like favorite fighter sub pilot.
Yes.
To go into the Nexus colony in her like tube shaped sub with all of its bits and bobs. It's a very, very close design to the attack launch used in Splashdown.
Yeah.
With the laser nose dock.
Yes.
But it is facing off against Macronesian attack subs, which are big wings.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really tell them apart.
And they really move underwater. Like, the ones with the wings, the Macronesia ones, really move like fighter planes in air. Or space planes. Like, The
Star Wars influence goes both ways.
Yeah, it does. But that's really how they move. They don't move like what we've traditionally seen of watercraft in Sequest.
So as she is like diving through to do, you know, a trench run, he is narrating about how the UEO is left with a choice. They can either pull out and leave all these colonists to fend for themselves against, again, expansionist Macronesia, or commit the world to war. And again, how many times did Sequest prevent just this from coming to pass? Like, they gave the Sequest to Bridger because of a situation just like where Hudson finds himself now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he also talks about how, like, you know, McGath and the UEO can hold all the sessions they want to try to stop the Alliance, but this is what it comes down to. And we cut to McGath trying to, like, get order over a summit where we also see...
Well, because he gave... Because he gave his favored lieutenant, Hendrix, an order to fire, even though she had crossed, like, a line.
Yeah, she technically was outside of the, like, colony boundaries, he told her to still fire.
Because he sees the big picture. You gotta do what's gotta be done. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Fredrix is played by Elise Neal, who would have been known at the time for the sitcom Loving, and before that, being a featured dancer in so, so many R&B music videos. After Sequest, she would go on to star in The Hughleys and appear in films as diverse as Scream 2, Mission to Mars, Logan, and Hustle and Flow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're at this UEO summit thing. Mm-hmm.
Seems to be outdoors.
Yeah, this is the weirdest thing. So
I don't know what location this is, and I wish I did.
Their location that they're at, it's first off, it's very pink and green.
Yes.
But it literally looks like the outside of a building
mm-hmm.
where it's an outside facade of a building, and they're in this, like, U-shape around a giant rock pool.
Yes.
And, like, it's just rocks. There's no water. But it looks like it would be where a fountain would be.
I don't think this was in 1995 Epcot. I would have seen pictures of this.
No, I don't think it is. But I really do feel like it is the some outside area of a building, and they just turn the water fountain off.
and put a bunch of, like, desks at you know,
around the edge of it.
Bright green ones. Very, very nice.
It's so bizarre. It's very weird.
But they treat it like this big, cavernous indoor conference space.
Yes. And I'm just like, why is there a pit of rocks?
Why is there a pit of rocks?
Why are you surrounding a pit of rocks?
Why is the room to this place clearly an exterior door, like a revolving door?
Yes. Why is it pink and green?
Because it's the future. That's what we do. So MacGath is there doing his
He's trying
thing.
To get control of the room. Everyone's arguing. Everyone's yelling. Born is there, and one of his, like, foot soldiers comes in and, like, whispers something to him, and he's getting ready to also yell about how they've been attacked. But then everyone goes silent because Lucas Walenchek just wanders in very drippy.
He's so wet.
He has just climbed out of a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And he's walking in, barely standing, like having to like grab hold of the chairs as he makes it. And everyone just watches. And like MacGath is just like staring at him because he hasn't seen this kid in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as he makes his way over, right as he gets to him, he collapses down unconscious.
This ends 6 minutes of straight narration.
With Hudson saying, I think we just got our miracle.
Yeah, because the last thing he said before this was, without Sequest, it'll take a miracle to stop Alexander Bourne.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Alexander Bourne, president of the Macronesian Alliance, he is played by Michael York.
Yes.
Known in the genre space as the titular Logan in Logan's Run,
mm-hmm.
Post-Sequest, and I think he's best known as Basil Exposition in the Austin Powers films. But he will always, always be that special little guy from Cabaret to me.
Yes.
One of the great films of all time, Cabaret.
Yes.
You think he and Roy had time on set to hang out? Do you think they would reminisce about being directed by Bob Fosse?
I hope they had one conversation about this.
In two of the great films of the 1970s?
Like, please. Just one conversation.
And Sammy Davis Jr. can show up and be like, well, I was on set for one sequence of Sweet Charity, and let me tell you, that was a trip.
So we go to new opening credits.
New title, mm-hmm. but new song, new title sequence that is very much in the vein of the season 2 sequence.
Yes.
It is clips and names and little picture-in-picture inserts of the cast as their name comes up.
Darwin's still there.
But
love it.
But it's all new clips, both in the inserts and in the full picture.
Yes.
Even though a lot of it is late season 2 stuff.
Some of it is. A lot of it is season 3 too, though.
The AI Bridger attack sub gets a great big hero shot.
Yeah.
You know? It's not all season 3. But I just imagine watching this in 1995... And watching it very, very closely with a little checklist and learning who died on the alien planet by just who doesn't show up in the credits.
Yeah, yeah. You want to know? You want to know who doesn't show up? Is it time to break the news for people on who does not return to this show?
I'd say you are 50-50 on these results, dear.
Wendy's gone. That's great. But with that, I also lose Ortiz, and that is fucking bullshit.
You're such a Dr. Smith hater that you never use her title.
No! Because none of them do ever, I feel like.
And they never will again.
Michelle.
She died on her way back to her own planet, literally. They did the thing.
I'm so sad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He was too sexy.
He was. He's too much.
They imagined how wet they'd have to make him and what that would do. And like, no, the standards and practices won't allow us to make that man that wet.
Can you imagine him crawling across the UEO with his wetness and his shoulders out? The world can't handle it.
The real story is that the ensemble is simply too big.
Yeah.
That decision was made, and looking at the way season two went, especially as, you know, every character gets at least one episode that's all around them, and what happens to Bridger? Bridger has, like, two or three across a 21-episode season. Wait a minute. And now he's leaving the show. Oh, no.
But let's remember, like, Brody doesn't want to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted out. So... Could have had nice tradesies. Who can be the action man? You know what? I know someone else.
So yeah, some decisions were made, and those are the two that did not even get a guest star or cameo or brief
appearance. Dead.
They are just not around anymore.
No. We don't officially find that out till later, but you quickly see. So, when we come back from the opening credits, we are at UEO Central Command in San Diego.
Yeah, a lot of things change in 10 years. They switch coasts.
I wrote McGath is hot, and that's not what I meant in my notes.
Well, maybe you did.
He was hot as in, like,
under the collar,
off.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was going for. But yeah,
he's very mad at his hauler pilot, who is also the hero of the Navy at the same time.
Yes.
Starting a shooting war.
Yeah.
Without authorization.
And so he's, you know, going, what the hell are you doing? You're starting a war. And he's like, no, I'm trying to prevent it.
You pay me a lot of money to do what I do. Go home. Let me earn it.
As he looks at a security video of Lucas in a jumpsuit held in, like, a prison.
It's an orange prison jumpsuit.
Yes.
It's not our tour swag
no,
jumpsuit.
No. He is a prisoner right now. And
in the world's biggest interview room.
Yes. Lucas is sitting with two armed guards behind him at the longest, shiniest board table I've ever seen in my life.
It has the cavernous effect of that, like, one scene in Network where the guy talks about how there are no nations anymore.
Yeah. And so Hudson walks in. Hey, Walenchek, I'm Captain Oliver Hudson. I need answers. Let me put this gun down on the table in front of you.
He's a no-nonsense guy. He cuts to the chase.
He claims that Lucas tried to attack McGath, and is like, so what was so important that you were going to attack him, that you needed to tell him something? Or do you not remember?
Yeah, like, this is an efficient story. Like, just from the question, we can fill in Lucas is, like, got some sort of amnesia from whatever got him back from Hyperion.
Yes.
They don't need to say it. We just get it from the wording of the question. Good.
Yes.
You're telling a 2-hour story in 1 hour. All right.
Yep. So he goes through, where's Sequest? Where's Bridger? Where's Ford? All of it is, I don't remember. Where have you been for the past 10 years? I have no idea.
But he does know where he is now. He recognizes this building as the Ballard Institute.
Yes.
We are giving tribute to Big Boy Bob, the Ballard man.
Is it the Ballard Institute where they went for that party with Biff?
Where he was gonna hook up and then
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It was an institute.
It was an institute, but I don't think it was the Ballard
was
Institute.
Was it not the Ballard Institute?
So they named this place the Ballard Institute to give tribute to Bob Ballard and ocean science, but then they also, in the time Lucas was gone, moved UEO Military Command into it, again, telling the story of how the world has changed in 10 Sequestless years.
Also, San Diego is now an island.
Yes!
And Hudson calls up a map of the world?
A thing that is just said and will not get explained for like 15 minutes of showtime.
Yeah.
But it will.
And Lucas looks at this map and he's like, no, this is wrong. This your is map, absolutely not right.
Your map is stupid for dumb people.
And he's like, so Hudson pulls up what the date of the map is, which is September 19th, 2032.
You think when the graphics department got to this, they were told they were moving to be a Tuesday's show?
Maybe.
Because it's one day off and that makes me suspicious.
And he's like, no, this is accurate. This is the correct map.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, so here's what I want to know. Back on the day you guys disappeared, Sequest moved here. What's there? Why did you guys go here? And Lucas, you know, the Tonga Trench. Like, we go there all the time. Well, why did you go there this time?
He's not talking about no Christmas tree. It's Shut the Fuck Up Tuesday. Yeah.
And this is where, like, Lucas is silent.
Mm-hmm.
And you are starting to catch on that there is stuff he doesn't remember, and then there is stuff he does remember, but he's not going to talk about it because aliens.
Because aliens.
So
then Hudson takes a different tack.
Yes.
He's like, all right, Lucas, what's your birthday? So he plugs December 23rd into the machine and is like, hey, computer, extrapolate. And you just see the red blob of Alexander Bourne's Macronesia growing and encroaching the entire Pacific in only 3 months' time.
Yes. And so he very quickly explains who Bourne is and the Alliance. And Lucas is like, oh, so you want the Sequest so you can, like, destroy the world? And he's like, no, I'm trying to save it.
Mm-hmm. It is, like I said last week, a whole lot of exposition that carries this episode, but it is exposition written in a way that doesn't just tell you the facts, it reveals to you the character of the person giving it.
Yes.
And that is a huge difference.
Yes. And it's so good. And, like, even in just, like, this whole moment between... This whole scene between Lucas and Hudson it's really setting up Hudson's character, it's setting up their relationship, and, you know, he's already said it, where, like...
He loves to talk about Bourne, though. Every scene, he's like, let me tell you about Alexander fucking Bourne.
Well, because they want you to know about fucking Bourne.
There are other things happening in this season.
But I do think, like, it's, like, the second time he said it, but he says it again to Lucas that, like, the UEO is not at war. According to them, this is just a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the two times he says it is such a good insight into his opinion of what is going on.
I wonder how this sounds to, you know, grandpa watching TV who is in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a war, according to Congress.
Yeah. You know, and it's again, it's such an insight into his character, his opinion on politics in the world and what the UEO is doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's such a quick way to do that.
I mean, Vietnam, too. There were so many TV...
Yeah.
There were so many, like, TV episodes about Vietnam veterans living their lives in the 90s.
Yeah.
That was, like, 1 in 5 touched by an angels, I swear.
Oh, yeah.
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 And now that language is being projected, like, into the future of almost 40 years ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Touched by an Angel is such a weird show. It lived in such, like, an odd, like, feel. Very different vibes. But it, like, had that such a weird aura to it. Like that Passions, the soap opera. Where you're just like, there's nothing else like this. What the fuck is going on? Yes, we can have demons and, like, talking, like... You know, dolls over here, and yeah, we'll have angels and they're suddenly light, and I don't know what's going on, but, like, things are glowing.
Yeah.
It's just weird. Could only do that back then.
It was the end of history and the time for the supernatural.
Yes. Lucas, like, stops holding it together by the end of all this. He's demanding to know, what did they do? Where's Bridger? They've got to know where he is, but also at the same time find him. Like, he's I mean, he's had all this information dumped on him.
And so he's desperate to find Boat Daddy.
Yeah.
He needs his Boat Daddy.
He needs his dad. It's been 10 years. The rest of his family could definitely be dead. Not that he had a great relationship with them. And he needs his Boat Daddy.
He needs Boat Daddy. So as, like, he is now the one asking all the questions, like, we end the scene because Hudson knows he's not going to get anything out of him. There's nothing to get. And we have a hard cut to a Bangkok table dancing club.
Yes.
It is smoky, sweaty. Everyone is just wet on this Navy show. Imagine that. And
for different reasons.
And my first thought is, oh, well, this is obviously where they're going to find Brody. And in 10 seconds, there's Brody.
There's Brody. Then you're like, they might find Piccolo here, but you find O'Neill.
Yeah.
And then we find Piccolo.
As Brody is wandering around like, which one of you is my mom? None of you? Okay, I hate this place. It sucks. A giant, the like, low cone peasant hat pops up with a comedy musical sting, and that's Tim O'Neill.
Yes.
Sure.
And Piccolo is surrounded by babes.
And lucky dice. Hey!
Yeah. And they're like, wait, what's going on? As they slowly, like, realize where they are.
Meanwhile, back in the Seas Pavilion.
Dagwood is at the aquarium with maybe Darwin? There is a dolphin. And Dagwood says, I know him. But there's nothing to actually indicate that it definitely is Darwin and not just, like, Darwin's in-captivity cousin.
Mm-hmm. And Dagwood is found by a janitor saying, like, hey, pal, the park is closed. So this, I think, is the Seas Pavilion at Epcot playing itself?
Yes. Ford... we find in the shower at a hotel.
In full uniform.
In full uniform.
That's how he does laundry.
And then we find Henderson in a
this
bed.
Big, comfy bed, just drowning in a duvet. She gets up. She finds champagne in an ice bucket and is a little confused. And then a very wet Commander Ford comes out of the bathroom and she's very confused.
And they're both like, what are you doing here?
And he's got his little peekaboo chest hair coming
out. Yeah. And everyone's wet. Everyone that we're seeing is just soaked. And before they can answer each other on, like, what are you doing here? Completely shocked that they're seeing each other. UEO people bust in.
Just a bunch of MPs are like, ah, we gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we go to a farmer in a cornfield who gets out of his tractor and the camera pans and we see the Sequest.
You know what it is?
In a cornfield.
It's the Jurassic Park brontosaur shot.
It is.
He just needs to, like, clumsily fiddle with his sunglasses.
Yeah.
It's that shot.
It is. And it's good.
And it's good. It's in a cornfield in
Iowa. It's in a cornfield.
So we go to commercial and come back and see a great
I don't think it's in Iowa.
I swear it says Iowa.
Does it?
Yeah. Which does make the later line incorrect.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't be Iowa based on the mileage they talk about later from it to Lake Michigan. They said it's 170 miles. It is not 170 miles
not
to Iowa.
Not from any point in Iowa, no.
No.
So there is a whisker in the mud. This is the first time we've seen a physical whisker prop since Bad Water, I think.
Yeah.
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 It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
As, like, Hummers drive past it. In the cornfield, a helicopter also lands where we got Hudson, we got Ford, we got Brody, Henderson, and O'Neill running out of it, along with a random doctor lady.
Dr. Perry here is played by Karen Fraction. We previously saw her in Special Delivery, the Dagwood murder episode,
mm-hmm.
credited as Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if that was her name or a title. There was a Baker and she played
them. No, that was, like, her name.
Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't a Baker.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't remember her in that episode, but she has the credit.
I do. I remember us talking about her. Because when we were also finding out who she was, I think she looks like the lady that was in Romeo plus Juliet as, like, the reporter.
Yes, yes.
And so we were, like, looking at her. I was like, oh, it's not her.
But it's not her.
No.
She is from Flint, Michigan.
Yeah. So she should know how far it is to Lake Michigan.
She knows how far it is to Lake Huron. Come on.
And if you're in Michigan, you know how far it is to all the lakes.
It's genetic.
You can sense it.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, pulls you like a magnetic force. You're like, ah, yes, which one?
That's some Ray Bradbury shit. All right. Dandelion wine. Yeah, all right.
Oh, maybe Gregory Allen Isikoff should write about, like, pulling you. And you're in a cornfield and you know which way to go because it's in your blood. The iron ore is just telling you.
and the copper and the manganese.
The Petoskey stone.
All the things that stain picture rocks. So she has been examining these apparent amnesiacs rediscovered after 10 years missing all over the UEO. That's strange. And is giving Hudson her report.
Yeah. And she's like, well, they all seem like they're in pretty good health. Here's the weird thing. So, like, Tim got a sister move, like, 3 days before they disappeared. And it's healed, like, 3 days, maybe a week tops.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they don't remember shit because it hasn't been 10 years for them.
She does not mention, well, it looks like Lieutenant Brody got shot in the gut by a lot of lasers.
But he seems okay.
That does not come up.
No, no, we just skip that one.
The physical medical evidence suggests that from the Sequest crew's perspective, they've been gone a week maybe, not 10 years.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, like no one's aged.
Mm-hmm. Also, how long did season 2 take that it's only been 10 years and not 12? Because if it's always 25 years from air date, which is like the rule of thumb, mm-hmm. it's been 12 years.
I think season 2 takes a while.
Sure.
Yeah. It's kind of like season 1 takes a while. Season 1, like, Lucas ages like 3 years.
I don't think that's true.
He like does. He's supposed to be like, when they check in about his age, it like advances pretty quickly.
I just wish they said 12 every time they said 10. That's all I want.
Season 1 is, like, over the course of 2.5 years.
Okay.
3, because of the ages that, like, Lucas is supposed to be. And then season 2 is, like, 2 years.
Okay.
Because Lucas is supposed to be, like,
29.
Now, 10 years later, yes. Like, he's 19 when they disappear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you go based on, like, when they started, what, he's, like, 15?
I think he starts, is like 16, 17.
No, because later in the episode where he gets the condom, he's almost 17.
Okay.
He says he's almost 17.
Right. So then he starts at 16. So I'm right.
I think he starts a little, I think he starts at 15.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because he's such a baby compared to then.
So once Hudson gets a little bit more information that it seems impossible, but so is everything else he's heard today. He begins speaking to the closest thing he has to a man in charge, Commander Ford.
Yes.
And he expresses that he is the hardest ass, hard ass to ever hard an ass.
Ford's like, I don't need to know what you do with your asses. Don't need to know how hard you go. That's between you.
And your ass.
And your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so he wants to know how long will it take to shake down the Sequest, and, Ford laughs at this. He's like, what? Like,
he's talking in the order of months, and for one thing, it's in a fucking cornfield!
Yeah, he's like, it's in a cornfield! First off, 6 months? Maybe? Like, he's like, oh, okay, you got 2 hours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He demands the impossible. Everyone is like, can you believe this guy? What the fuck? And as, you know, he reacts with disbelief, Hudson gets up in his face like, does it seem like I need you to explain the plain fact, you know, Commander Ford? Do I look like I don't know what's going on? Because, yeah, he's got choppers inbound to lift them. This is when he talks about, well, if you need water, we're you know, this many miles.
We're 170 miles.
An incorrect
miles.
Number of miles to Lake Michigan. And, you know, the Mississippi's even closer, blah, 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 blah.
I need to look up, actually. Need to look up, how far is it? Okay, if we want to go, let's go from here. Okay.
And remember, they're flying by helicopter, not driving. So it should be shorter.
Okay, it is 143 miles.
Okay.
Between us, which we are still miles from the lake.
Not 30 miles.
No, but we still got, as I said, it's 143 miles. If you go to the middle of the Mississippi.
Okay, the number he gives for how far the Mississippi is tells us how many miles into Iowa they are.
Okay.
I think they're really, really shaving it and counting on it being a direct as the bird flies distance, not road distance.
So that's like, and again, that's like the farthest point.
I think they just barely make, like, within rounding, I think they make it.
I guess. That's only if you're on the edge of Iowa. And you're dropping it on the shores of Chicago.
The edge of Iowa is still Iowa. I gotta side with Hudson on this one.
Questionable. I say it's, this is questionable. So Ford, though, goes back to Hudson and is like, you know, what kind of fucking person are you to, like, judge me as an officer on my fucking boat? And he's like, well, I'm captain of that boat.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
And he smiles or does the closest thing he's done to a smile.
Yeah, I don't think his face actually can do that.
But he's clearly pleased with himself. That, yeah, it was given over to him while it was missing, sure, but he's got the paperwork. He could show it to you in any second you want.
It's his boat until Bridger shows up. And they're like, okay, fuck, we gotta deal with this. And then O'Neill's the one that's like, so, sir, Captain, this would go a lot faster if Lucas was here.
Where's that Lucas boy?
Hudson radios to, like, bring Wall and Check, you know, to the cornfield. And we cut to Lucas, and you know what he's doing? He is fucking escaping his UEO prison.
Yes.
He is running through the underground of it to the launch base. He knocks a dude out with a fire extinguisher, and he steals a fucking shuttle.
I believe this big water tank he's running around is backstage at the Seas Pavilion in Epcot.
I think it is, yeah. And I love it.
And did you notice a detail about the interface of the sub he steals?
Cool keyboard?
It's the cool season one keyboard. It's the split keyboard with each half in a divot for some reason. It's back.
It is, I think, a slightly different one version.
Yes, but yes. But the general idea is still there. I think they had to, you know, manufacture fabricate a new one. So yeah, Lucas is in the wild. He's escaping.
And Hudson has found out, and he's like, God damn it, that kid has escaped and he stole some. Fuck him. And so they're like, oh, should we track him? And Ford's like, yes, track him. And Hudson's like, absolutely not. Yep. And they're like, but he's a kid and he's scared. And he's like, of course he is. He stole a sub.
He should be scared. Fuck that kid. But our resources have to go to other things. I love that Brody is clearly all about Hudson. He wishes Hudson was his captain this whole time.
He just wants to impress him so bad. And he's like, maybe this man will be my daddy.
Cool guy, gunshoot man. Fuck yes, finally.
Man means business.
Yeah.
Grunt.
And so, after disregarding Lucas, what does he do? He gives the fucking Bourne presentation again. He loves to do this.
Yes, he does.
And now we learn why San Diego is an island.
Yes. Particle liquidation.
Liquefaction. Yes, weaponizing subduction, melting the land beneath his enemies. This is the secret weapon of the Macronesian Alliance on which their expansion is built.
Which is so fucking bizarre. I don't think this ever comes up again. I could be wrong, but I really don't feel like we really ever get into the whole, like, we are melting, like, ground.
Yeah, yeah, and that is the specific tech edge. We talk about them with an economic and general tech edge.
We talk about, like,
specific
their
specific tech, not so much.
Yeah, we talk about their fancy-ass, like,
Lysander.
Their fancy-ass Lysander, like, ships. We talk about all these other things. I don't feel like we ever come back to this, like, liquid gun thing.
We'll keep an eye out for the liquid gun.
We'll have to keep an eye out, but I don't really remember it being, like, a big thing.
And as, yeah, he's putting up the maps of Macronesian expansion, it is O'Neill's turn to say, like, oh, wow, it all depends on Nexus Colony. If it falls, there's the whole Pacific.
Yep. You connected the points. He did his job for him.
Yep.
Good job.
He's the smart one.
And Brody, you know, is over there like, I fucking knew that. I was going to say that. I was going to say it.
I was raising my hand. I was waiting for him to call on me.
You just had to, like, talk without being called on. And now you're going to be his favorite.
Captain's pet over here. I'm the one who brought the apple to school today. Gosh. So speaking of Alexander Bourne, we find him in the fancy bad guy dinner.
Yes, he is at his palace having dinner with the peacekeepers. Yes. Here's the thing to know about the Alliance. All of their military costumes just come from Farscape.
Well, perhaps they inspired Farscape.
Perhaps they inspired Farscape. Lots of red and black.
Red and black. Yeah, yeah. Red black chest on a black jacket and pants. It's, you know what? There's other connections to talk about in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And this uniform is being worn by General Stassi, who's played by Andy Stahl, who went on to have roles in The Patriot, The Blind Side, and October Sky, among others.
I love October Sky!
Yes, you do. That's why I put it in the little
that
list.
That movie is so good. Why don't I own it? I need to own... Do I own it? I don't think I own it. I fucking love... If you've never seen October Sky,
you'll
to
see
watch
this
October
guy in it.
Sky.
Yeah.
It's good. Go watch it. Yeah, so they're having dinner, and, like, Bourne's just boasting about how awesome they are and how the UEO is
they're ripe for the picking. They're about to collapse, and
yeah, it's not going to be hard to take them over, and they don't deserve to like exist. I don't know why people like them, etc., etc.
The point of this scene isn't so much his particular ideology, but his demeanor, his bearing, his confidence. And, like, first he gets the news that, sir, they found Sequest in a cornfield in Iowa. And he's like, oh, what are they going to do? Put up a stand and sell souvenirs? Oh, I'm so erudite and confident. And then someone's like, well, actually, they airlifted it with a lot of helicopters. It's in the Pacific. And he's like, okay, dinner's over. It's time to say, what the fuck happened? What are you people doing?
And my favorite thing, though, is like, what about Bridger? Did they find Bridger?
That's it. That's the thing.
He's like, we gotta take Nexus before they find Bridger, because if they find Bridger, we are so fucked.
Sequest changes everything, but what he's really afraid of is Nathan Hale Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, that communicates something about how, like, Bridger is committed and determined and principled. But we've never seen anyone intimidated or scared of Bridger.
I feel like that's the legend over the past 10 years, right? Mm-hmm, how it's evolved.
Right. That makes sense.
Because,
that is an
like,
interesting idea.
They were, right? Like, the Sequest and everything and Bridger, like, they were known. But they're with something that is suddenly gone, there becomes this mystery and this you build it up.
Yeah. If this is a logical thing, is it that he's afraid of what a UEO with Bridger could be again? Could be principled and anti-corporate at their best.
Yeah.
Or, again, is it more on the side of it's been 10 years of the legend of Bridger growing as the guy who did the impossible time and time again, and now he's just a boogeyman?
Yeah.
Because Sequest won every naval fight it was in. But it's usually because it had, like, 10 times as many torpedoes. he never struck me as the tactical genius. But then, you know, the Cyber Bridger AI sub was about how he used to be.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is you also need to remember that he used to be known as that, too.
Right,
like,
right.
He was the one who trained future leaders of the military in that type of stuff.
Including that lady with the stick from To Be or Not To Be.
Yes.
Yeah.
We gotta go check in on Lucas. He has arrived.
He's washed up on the shores of the Yucatan.
Yes, he is at Bridger's Island.
The shore's off the Yucatan, rather. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. To try and find him. And he finds Bridger's house that has definitely been destroyed by some hurricanes and left to be overgrown.
But he finds a shoebox of Bridger family photos, including one of the two of them together from the episode Daggers. He's got his... he's got his motorcycle jacket on and his cool guy shades.
Yeah. and so he goes looking through the house, and he comes across a child, and then
a tiny child.
Suddenly Bridger's there.
A little mop-headed blonde child, and there is Bridger, the man himself who everyone's looking for with a head bandage and a cane.
Mm-hmm.
and introduces this teeny tiny child as a grandson.
They also hug.
They hug.
They gotta get their hug in. But yeah, a grandson from his son?
From Robert?
That's been dead?
The late Robert?
For, like, what, 15 years?
For a long time!
And this kid's, like, 6? Maybe? So, Bridger is filling Lucas in on what happened while Lucas plays with wires to get a computer up and going. And it is that the child's mother left him at an embassy when he was 3 days old.
Mm-hmm.
They said she was very sick. Bridger woke up at said embassy from the wet times. And they suddenly were like...
The wet times.
Yes. They were suddenly like, hey, here's this child that is your grandson.
And if this child had been born before Robert allegedly now died, he would be older. He would be at least Lucas's apparent age by now.
Yeah, he would
if
be.
If not older.
He would be at least 15.
Yeah.
If not old. No, he'd be even older because, like, 10 years plus, say, the, like, what, 5 years of season 1 and 2. And he died before then.
Yeah, plus all the island time when Bridger was in self-exile from the Navy.
Which was at least, like, 4 years. So, like, yeah, he'd be exactly Lucas's age, if not older. But no, he's 7. Because that means was alive?
Robert was alive for, like, a while. Remember that time when they just said out of nowhere in higher power that Robert might be alive? We kind of forgot that for all of season 2, but it's back, baby.
Yeah. And, like, Bridger isn't, like, mad that, like, why would my son hide that he, you know, was alive for me? He's like, well, he had to have a reason. I need to find him.
You know what? It's the first thing I'm going to ask. Maybe, you know, top 3. Definitely top 3 things I'm going to ask.
And so Lucas gets this computer up and going, and he gets the coordinates of the sequest to find out that, yes, it has been put back in water.
And as soon as he gets those coordinates, Bridger's like, okay, take that thing apart. No signal. No tracking.
No one can know we're here.
I gotta find this place. I gotta keep this place secret for the tiny child and his silent nanny.
Yes.
No war shall touch my grandson.
So over on the Sequest, Dagwood is petting Darwin, and on the bridge, and Ford's like, hey, we probably shouldn't, like, do that here, and he's like, well, I can't do it elsewhere because Hudson's on C deck and he don't like me.
And he really doesn't like Darwin.
Yeah.
And
he's like, okay, make it quick, just, like, get out of here before he's here.
And the old cast, the ones that are on the bridge at the moment at least, all have a very brief chat to, like, register how they feel about this new captain.
Yes.
It's mostly unease.
Yes. Piccolo's basically like, you're better. And Ford's like, it's not a competition. He's like, yeah, it is.
Everything's a competition, Commander.
I love Tony's shorts.
Shorts have entered the costume.
There are now short options.
A lot can happen in a week that is 10 years.
Yeah. As they're doing this on the bridge, they suddenly get a signal that there is a ship out there. Oh, wait, no, there's 2. And they will not identify themselves.
They won't identify themselves. Ford hops into action, sits in the chair, and starts, like, ordering everyone to action stations. It is time to open fire on these unidentified bogeys.
Yes, but then Hudson rushes in and is like, stand down. And they're like, but we got these 2 unidentified bogeys. And he's like, they are. That's my lieutenant.
Mm-hmm. Then pick up the phone, lady. Come on, yeah. Fredericks.
Say who you are.
Flash your IFF signal. Come on.
And, like, when she comes on board, she just walks past, like, Ford and Brody, doesn't look at them at all, goes straight to Hudson and gives him an update.
I love that. I love what that says, right? Like,
fuck you.
She knows who her team is. She doesn't know these people.
Well, you know, if you don't want to get shot, you could at least say, hey, hey, I'm on
coming in.
The captain's team. what she's there to say is that they have seen action that shows that the Alliance is going for Nexus.
Yep, they're going to take them now before the Sequest can get there and change the situation.
So they're going to go. They're going to go intervene. And Ford tells Brody to assemble a team. And he's like, fuck yeah.
I love assembling teams.
Yes.
How many sleeves can we have, Captain? I hope it's none. Please say zero sleeves.
Frederickson is going to go out with someone else and the fighters and, you know, have their back as they get their launch to go to the colony. And as this is all happening, Brody notices her neck.
Yeah. She's got a thing on there. And he's like, hey, hey, Captain, I noticed that your super cool, awesome fighting lady has a psych implant. Is that going to be a problem? Huh?
And Hudson's like, well, is it going to be a problem? Because she's going to have your back. She could accidentally shoot it if it's a problem.
What this suggests is that psych implants, whatever that is, more on that in future weeks, were a new and perhaps experimental thing back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The technology has gotten a lot more reliable. That when you see that, you shouldn't be like, oh God, should we trust them with a gun?
Yeah. Because back 10 years ago, probably they would not be serving in the military based on this the vibe here.
Not that Brody has always been the most understanding about difference in
women, generally.
You know, I don't think Lieutenant James Brody is, let's say, a disability advocate.
Or feminist.
Well, that ship sailed. Sank, I would say.
She'd be like, Captain, what's the policy on sexual harassment nowadays?
How much are we allowed to do? Please say a lot.
Is my training still valid? I'd really like to not have to go do it again.
Well, it's at least 10 years out of date. I'm sorry to say. It's so expired.
Damn it! So the Alliance is moving in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got the shuttle launching towards the colony from the Sequest with the speeders going with them.
Everyone's moving in. I love the contrast in this formation between, yeah, these sleek attack sub designs in formation with the old
launch style.
Launch that is designed after, you know, an Alvin or something. It is not smooth. It is not sleek.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's good.
And so the Alliance, like, gets that they're going into, and they're like, okay, we gotta move before the Sequest blocks us. We gotta go for it. Mm-hmm, everyone's mm-hmm. doing stuff. And then we see another shuttle come flying through that is being fired on by the Alliance, and it is Lucas, and he is maydaying to the Sequest. And Hudson's like, well, that's unfortunate, but we're engaged, so, like, good luck. And he's like, but I have Captain Bridger with me! And they're like, oh.
And that is everyone's big priority, is what's up with Bridger. This is, like, We're really putting Captain Bridger on a pedestal across this episode.
Yes, because Hudson orders Frederickson to fall off the formation of trying to go save Nexus from this invasion.
Yeah.
And instead to go save the shuttle with Bridger and bring him on board.
This one man is worth sacrificing Nemo and Marlin and Dory and all three sharks.
Yes.
Turtle Talk with Crush has fallen!
Whoa. Dude.
It's not totally awesome, dude.
That's not totally awesome, dude. Put it there, little guy.
That's what the mayor of Nexus says to President Bourne as he enters through the Hydrovaders to survey his latest conquest. And we come back from commercial with Captain Time. It is hot Captain on Captain action.
Yeah!
It's not that hot. These are old men.
Yeah. But all the ladies are still interested.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They've got it where it counts. Personality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should have. Roy
does have thicker hair than Hudson. We'll give him that.
Yes, this is very true. So Bridger is looking at some photos in his room, and Hudson comes in, and he's like, oh, hey, Commander Hudson. He's like, it's Captain now, and he's like, sure it is. Not surprised.
So they have history.
History.
This is yet another person, because Bridger knows fucking everyone in the whole goddamn ocean.
I am so surprised that he's not like, Bourne, I taught that kid English. I was his godfather. Can you imagine?
Oh yeah, I remember him when he was just like
he was really obsessed with Matt Damon.
I mean, I guess this goes to show that the trade show circuit and the like ocean science symposiums, there's not a lot of crossover.
No,
that's where Bourne was, and that's where Bridger was, and they did not meet.
Yeah, Bridger and him have a little chat. He asks him like, "Hey, why didn't you guys just build another boat?"
Mm-hmm.
And we get more that like Bourne has all the technology, I guess.
Yeah, like
he bought the patents. And stuff.
I think this is, like, interesting and believable world building. Like, Sequest has shifted to an ideology that believes that when a government, when a state or state-like entity devolves responsibility to the private sector, it will never get it back. And the private sector will not work for the UEO to make another Sequest. They'll just make a Sequest successor and keep it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Hudson lays into him a bit that it's like, you know, see, this is what happens when you treat the Sequest like it's the science thing only and not the weapon it is,
mm-hmm.
is we, like, lose control of the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they are interrupted by Tim radioing in, "Hey, Captain!" And they're both like, "Yes?"
You gotta do it. And there's a bit of like, no, I'm sorry, Captain. I meant the Captain. Yeah.
Bridger, that one. The OG Captain. and so Bourne is radioing them.
From his new office, which is filmed in the sponsor lounge at the Seas Pavilion. Currently available for private events, like wedding receptions.
Oh my god. If we ever do a vow renewal.
We could do a vow renewal in a Sequest filming location.
In our jumpsuits.
Well, I mean, we could. We could probably get the church where they filmed the computer episode where Lucas fell in love with the computer he had to euthanize.
That is the only way I'd ever have a ceremony in a church.
As if it's the Frank Lloyd Wright church they filmed that episode.
Yes! Yes, where Lucas wants to sex the computer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stroke those rods.
He took so long taking those rods out.
Well, they weren't properly lubricated.
I mean, yeah, they were making kind of a little clangy noise. So, they're like, "Hey, Bourne, release the colony."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's like, "No, I'm only going to do that when you all get out of here. Like, I don't, you're all very dangerous." And they're like, "How are we dangerous? You invaded a colony." And he's like, not really. I liberated them.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
See, he's like, "No, this is an act of war." And he's like, "Well, if you want one, get out of here. You have an hour. Like, then we can have a war if you're not gone."
But this scene is really good because it is all about, like, seeing Hudson, our new captain, through the eyes of Bridger, our previous one that we love and respect and cherish. And like, using that character's respect as the currency with which to buy the audience's respect for Hudson. Because, like, he comes around. Like, by the end of this scene, Bridger's like, "Wow, that officer on the way up sure did finish coming up. That's a man that could handle my ship."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After they get off the phone, or, you know, vid call, he has, like, a few questions. Like, you know, you really know him. You really think you can take him down. You really think you can do this with Sequest.
Let me invite you to speak on your favorite subject, Alexander Bourne.
Now, I got this PowerPoint presentation I want to show you. I'm going to bring up a map, okay, and it's going to be time slammed.
Now, there's this much red, but later there will be this much red.
And they talk a bit more about the Sequest, and he's like, "You know, it's... I really love this ship. I've had a really fun time, like, skippering it while you've been gone for the little time I've had. Even if it's designed around this animal." as he points at Darwin in the tubes, and he's like, you know, Bridger does this whole, like, well, we live in his world, so you should be able to live in ours. And Hudson's like, you know, the UEO kept your patent for these tubes. They're all over the place now. They're in, like, every colony. You probably have made a fortune over the past 10 years. And they look at each other.
And they both have the same dawning realization at the same moment.
And run out!
And the realization is not that, yeah, Bridger is, like, as wealthy as Alexander Bourne or whatever. The realization is that he has the unique expertise to sneak anybody into any colony via these tubes that have become, like, basic infrastructure.
Yes. And they're like, that is how we will get into Nexus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they are sending Ford and Brody through the tubes to the colony.
Yep. In full scuba gear to go through the tubes that they love to go through in the ship, after all.
Yes.
And what do they find but President Bourne and a smoochy lady.
Mm-hmm.
A very smoochy lady.
They got him at gunpoint and they make Bourne call, what's his name?
General Stasi?
Yes. That dude. And is like, hey,
peacekeeper.
peacekeeper dude, we're going to leave now. We're going to get on our boats and leave. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what do you mean we're going to leave right now?
And it starts with this phone call, but then, you know, you cut to Bourne pull out and it's Bourne at gunpoint, hostage Bourne. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, so can I go now too? And they're like, after everyone's out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
After everyone else is gone, then you can leave. Not before then.
So he is lost, but he is President Bourne. Therefore, he is supremely confident. Okay, you hold Nexus, but continuing to hold it will bankrupt the UEO. He'll win either way. Instead of just taking territory, his opponent will just collapse under its own inefficiency.
Yes. So they eventually get word that everyone else is gone. They let him go. They head into the colony where everyone has been freed and everyone is celebrating.
Cheers and hugs and whooping and hollering.
Yes, there should be, like, Ewok drum music
right now. Yup nub!
This is
the last stretch of Yup Nub.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to be replaced in 1997.
It is! And so everyone's hugging everyone, and then Ford Henderson's apparently come to the colony too,
mm-hmm.
And they hug.
And they the hug?
They linger very long.
They seem to really enjoy this hug, and then they release the hug and think about how much they both liked that hug.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So then,
what's up with that champagne bottle in the ice bucket?
I have some thoughts about that, but we're going to save it after the next scene.
Yeah.
So we go to the bridge, where Bridger is having a staff meeting.
And and it's an all-staff, all hands on deck.
Yes. And so we get caught up on why things are the way they are.
The one big bit of exposition we've been waiting for all episode,
mm-hmm.
it's here at the very end.
Yes. Is that Bridger is the one who erased the Sequest memory bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't think they'd make it back alive, and he didn't want that knowledge in the hands of the aliens on Hyperium. But as they were dying, Tobias and him, like, made a promise to him that they would do everything they could for them. And so when they all died, they actually fell into a deep meditative coma in
uh-huh.
the sea.
Uh-huh.
And while some of them didn't make it, most of them.
We're not going to name any names. We're not going to point out. You know who. Don't worry about it.
Most of them were saved from their undersea comas. And Tobias was able to get some rescue pods
mm-hmm.
somehow and get them all on it and send them back to Earth.
I wish these were the goo pods from Dreamweaver and they just all woke up inside slime balls with weird human skin.
Right. And so they were all transported to the last peaceful thought they had in their mind before they died.
Very wet. Very wet.
So I'd like to go through what their peaceful thoughts were.
Yeah.
Lucas.
At an office building, I guess, partying at the Ballard Institute.
Yeah, like, right? Like, yeah. Kiss and what's her name, right? If it was the Ballard Institute that I'm remembering that the name's right, it was when he was there at the party and he was kissing the girl?
Sure, sure.
We're going with that one? Okay.
Let's say those are the same institute.
Let's say it's the same institute because it's the only way it makes fucking sense. Okay?
And he had no peaceful thoughts in the entirety of season two.
Bridgers was an embassy in Brussels.
He had a really good meeting. They paid for lunch. It was a great lunch.
Tim Brody and Piccolo was...
Boys' night.
Ford and Henderson was a hotel...
The same hotel room
that it seems neither of them had been in before together.
They both had a very peaceful memory at separate times. You know, small world, right? Yeah.
Is it that aliens didn't know that there are, like, different hotel experiences, and so they just put them in the same hotel? Because they were both, like, they both had the, this is not a memory I remember of us sharing this hotel room.
Right. Well, maybe it's less specific than that. She loves a duvet. He loves a nice, warm water shower. And the aliens are like, well, that to me says hotel room. Yeah. Let's be a little efficient here.
So, did the ship itself really like corn? Or is it about Iowa?
Well, you wipe the Sequest memory core. It has nothing to go off of.
And so they're like, well, it kind of looks like corn.
Like the hull of the Sequest.
Yes.
It's
like a corn husk. So I guess let's send it to corn.
Let's send it to corn.
Okay, so then...
Let's send it to corn.
Bridger then announces that he is going to be leaving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That world peace needs to be maintained, and Hudson's the man to do that. And he needs to go raise his grandson and try to find his son.
Yes.
And he will continue to work with scientific communities, but it's time for him to leave.
He basically promises to guest star a couple times.
Yes.
He all but mentions his contract with NBC in this speech.
And this is the first that Lucas has heard this.
Yes.
Bridger did not have a conversation with Lucas about this beforehand. Lucas looks gutted.
For the first time, he has truly been abandoned by Boat Daddy.
Yes.
So many false alarms, so many fears, and it has happened.
And he's like, Captain, no. And Bridger is like, you know how much I love this boat, but my life is filled with so much more now.
Mm-hmm.
So much more than you, Lucas, who I couldn't take a moment to tell you that I'm going to be leaving.
He's been replaced with a biological child. He's been kicked out of the nest by the cuckoo bird.
He has been kicked out of the only family he knows because of a grandson and the fact that this guy can actually go find his real son.
Mm-hmm. That he forgot about the quest to find for an entire season.
And it's not like, hey, Lucas, do you, as a 19-year-old, 10 years in the future, where we don't yet know if your family is alive, want to come with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or want to stay here?
Because he's not in the Navy.
He's not in the Navy! Which, you know what? In the next fucking scene is gonna become a thing. So
after he makes this announcement, he gives a special one-on-one goodbye to Commander Jonathan Ford.
Not Lucas.
Who absolutely deserves it.
He absolutely deserves it.
I'm not saying Ford shouldn't. I think maybe Lucas should also. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
But Ford is the one and only who gets the one-on-one goodbye. And then a great big blanket special goodbye to everyone else because he loves the ship and her crew.
Mm-hmm.
And every single person gives him one big emotional salute on the order from their new captain. And that is the end of Nathan Bridger's captaincy of Sequest DSV.
He leaves.
He leaves.
Later, Hudson is in his quarters.
Mm-hmm. Doing push-ups.
Doing push-ups, and Lucas comes in.
Captain push-ups.
Immediately makes a comment on the fact that Hudson has made himself very at home in Bridger's quarters very quickly.
I don't see Bridger's name on the door. It is his home. He should.
Yeah. And so Hudson makes him, like, hold his ankles where he continues to do, like, sit-ups during this conversation.
Yep.
And Lucas is there. He's like, hey, you know what? I wanted to apologize for, like, running out on you before. And he's like, oh, you didn't run out on me. I was like, I know. I ran out of myself. Nope.
No.
You stole a sub.
You stole
and you ran away from, like, custody.
Yeah, that's what
you kind
did.
Of committed crimes.
Yeah, but because when Lucas comes to this room, it's for his emotional catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be cared for by Boat Daddy. And to be, like, especially over season two, Bridger is the last person to meet him as the child.
Yeah.
And Hudson, that is not a child. That man has passed his 18th birthday. That is an adult.
That's an adult, yeah.
I'm not your keeper. I'm your captain. And yep. I'm not really your captain because no civilians on my boat. That's a quote. No civilians on my boat.
And Hudson does, like, tell him, you know, you were emotionally motivated to find your captain. I can respect this, but also, like, you committed crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. But you would have made a very good member of the Sequest crew. And he's like, but wait, I am. And he's like, no civilians on my boat. That's when it comes up. No civilians on my boat, so you should get Ford to, like, take you on, mm-hmm. have a good life, kid. You're not here. And Lucas is like, whoa, 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 whoa.
So this is, like, the last big thing we need to get in the premiere. Season 3, 2032, no science crew. No civilian complement.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, like, our computer guy is going to be a Navy computer guy.
Yeah. And so Lucas is like, well, what if I sign up?
Mm-hmm.
What if I join up as, like, a lieutenant or something? And he's like, oh, well, start as an ensign. we're not going to jump quite that far ahead.
And his objection is, well, Darwin's an ensign. And Captain Hudson says,
an ensign. We argued about this earlier on in the show. You were like, he's not an ensign. I was like, he totally is an ensign.
And Hudson sides with me by saying, the fuck he is? No.
He's totally an ensign.
Not anymore. He's not. Because that is ridiculous bullshit. You cannot give a naval commission to an animal.
So Lucas signs up. However, though, he's like, okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
I will sign up so I can stay on my only home I know.
Yes!
After my boat papa has abandoned me, my family might be dead.
Uh-huh.
My only friends are here. I'm gonna sign up for the Navy because where else am I supposed to go? Do we get into all this? No, but no. My God.
Mm-hmm. Instead, like, he is trying to put on a brave face. He's trying to save face by, like, trying to negotiate. But, of course, this is not a negotiation. This is Captain Hudson saying what the rules of his Navy are.
Yes, because he's like, he goes through this whole thing of, like, well, do I have to wear a uniform? Yeah.
Yeah, when you're on duty, yes. It's a uniform.
What about my hair?
You make it neat, presentable, or the next haircut you get will be from me.
Can I still come or go? Yeah, you can go, but you're not coming back.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be AWOL. Like,
he technically gets a concession for the hair. Although, neat and presentable, I mean, according to whom, right? According to Hudson? I don't think you got anything in this. His hair, by the way, we didn't mention it. He really grew it out
it
for
grew
season
out,
three.
It's grown out so much.
He spent more than a week on that alien planet. I don't care what the doctor says.
And it was, like, longer towards the end of season two, but, like, it is long.
Yeah.
It stays long throughout the whole season. Like, a lot of other seasons, you can tell when, like, he's gotten a haircut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does not happen.
So it turns out this is a concession.
Yeah.
There you go. So here we have it, Ensign Walenchek, and he salutes, and he's not very good at it yet.
Nope.
No.
I mean, he was good when he did it to, like, Bridger, but, like, that was, like, a thing where everyone's doing it, and mm-hmm. now he's like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to before I leave this room, I guess, and he's like,
no,
let me
not
file
yet.
The paperwork
you got, not,
first, kid,
no,
like.
Thank you. And that's the end of the episode, and, like I said at the top, in Whale Song, one of those things that we said was like, hey, what would happen to Lucas on a militarized boat?
Mm-hmm.
What would happen to Lucas if he stayed on Sequest and Bridger left?
Mm-hmm.
Now we have 12 weeks worth of an answer to that question ahead of us.
Only 12 weeks. I've said it before. I know I have. This is such a bittersweet season for me because I love this season so much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cut short.
It is.
And it kills me because it's so good and knowing what else could have happened and it's all that unknown of like, oh, I want more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want to enjoy it. But with every episode we watch, we get closer to there just not being more and me being so mad that they lost the opportunity to make more.
So when I said the end of the episode, I mean it. There is no fish fact.
Fuck those fish.
There's no Bob.
Fuck science.
Bob never came to the East Coast, and SeaWorld is gone. SeaWorld has gone away as well.
I do think it's so funny though that the UEO command is back in like California.
Yeah.
But well, they don't have fish facts. We still have fish facts.
Yeah.
Do you have a fish fact?
I've got a Hudson fact.
Oh.
So if Lucas had made a bit of a better impression
on
this new captain, he may have been able to argue that his years of previous service aboard Sequest into a commission as Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Mm.
This is a higher rank, but it is the same pay scale as an ensign.
Mm.
This would...
Oh, so it's like a promotion without the money.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks.
I mean, pay scales are a range, after all, so... But this would put him at the same rank as John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Johnny Carson, Harvey Milk, who is not named John, Henry Fonda, and President George H.W. Bush, who learned to take off and land planes on an aircraft carrier in Lake Michigan, where they threatened to take Sequest.
What if they would have taken Sequest there and then it would have wrecked? And then we would have had, like... You know, the wreck of the Sequest DSV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It flips over in the river because everyone is on one side waving goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, then it just keeps flipping. It's kind of a tube.
This is true. This is true.
Darling, have you got a fish fact?
I do. So, in honor of this episode filming at the Seas Pavilion at Disney,
yes,
which is themed right now to Finding Nemo, we are going to talk about clownfish.
Okay, sure.
Told you there's a connection. Clownfish mm-hmm. are omnivores,
mm-hmm.
Though they mostly feed on plankton. And they live in groups consisting of a breeding female and male, along with some other non-breeding individuals. And they have like a hierarchy of their size with the female at the top.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, when the female disappears, whether it's due to like Finding Nemo situations or not.
Okay.
The breeding male changes sex and becomes the breeding female.
Right. Why
and
didn't that happen in Finding
steps
Nemo?
Up because they didn't have the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm. This is why it takes a village.
It takes a village. You gotta have your clownfish village.
So you can change your sex when necessary.
When
raise
mama
children.
Clownfish gets eaten by the barracuda, daddy clownfish can become mama clownfish.
Second mama clownfish.
And the other clownfish can then step up.
Mm-hmm. I'm not the stepdad, I'm the clownfish that stepped up.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So
everyone climbing one step on the sex ladder.
Yes.
I saw a Zillow listing and you could tell they had a sex ladder.
Yeah. So that's how like clownfish hierarchy and habitats work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And once they change, they can't change back. But,
well, yeah, you don't want to go down the sex ladder.
No, because then it comes with, like, a pay decrease, and you want the pay increase.
Right,
and
going down is for the sex swing. That's completely different.
Yeah, you do risk the barracuda now eating you, but, you know.
That's what the pay increase is for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I don't have all the details of it, but apparently scientists have been learning more about the different types of clownfish and, like, connecting the amount of, like, stripes they have actually correlates to their ability to, like, handle different levels of, like, poison from the anemones. Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. So, like, one, like, they found that ones that have, like, certain amounts tend to, like, be able to withstand more poisonous anemones than others. There's your clownfish fact that is connected to this episode.
That's a lot of clownfish facts. Yeah. I know so much more about clownfish than I did yesterday.
I feel like Finding Nemo did not give me an accurate representation of clownfish.
No! And you mean schools of fish aren't legitimate educational institutions?
Apparently.
For young fish to hang out together?
Apparently.
I mean, just last episode, we learned how inaccurate their representation of sea stars are. None of them sound anything like Alice and Janney.
No.
Not in the real world.
No. So, darling, are you so excited for season three?
I'm so excited for season three. I am.
I love, like, season three.
Since Whiskers has begun, I've been trying to, like, keep my ear to the ground and try to, like, see what people are talking about SeaQuest out in the world of 2024. And season three is not generally well liked.
No.
There, like, a lot of people have strong feelings that season three was a big turn in a negative direction. It's not a universal opinion. We're not, like, the only holdouts in a world gone mad or anything. I'm not saying that. But it's an opinion I've seen a lot.
It is. And I think it's because people are all tied up in still season one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got mad at season two. And what they wanted was for season three to, like, bring back what season one had.
Instead, it has a third idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which works great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, like, I love season one. There is stuff I love there. There are relationships I love there. But you have to also let it go. Wasn't working. It wasn't going to work. I feel like people just don't give season three a chance. And, like, what kills me, too, is because, like, we love it. And so when we were meeting Michael Ironside at C2E2,
mm-hmm.
I was fangirling so fucking hard.
Yes.
Like,
about Scanners. Not about Total Recall.
And I just, like... I mean, he came around to us, I think. Like, it took him a little time to process it. And, like, I think it took a moment,
but it did happen.
But I just really hope, like, he really got, like, no, like, we really love you in this. Like, it's, I know you have, like, bad memories from, like, the frustrations of filming it. But, like, you're so good in it. We appreciate it so much.
Like, the scene... And a half. He is, like, where the captains are together.
Yeah.
He is bringing it, and Roy is 1 foot out the door.
Yeah.
Like, we have not seen the end of Nathan Hale Bridger in this show, and he does some of his finest work in season three. But it is not in the premiere.
No.
No. And just, like, seeing that is real, like... Yeah, life is here. There is opportunity, there is energy, there is a vision, and I think part of the idea, especially with the renaming, is we're going to go in a new direction and try to find a new audience.
Mm-hmm.
And renaming your show does not fool people who still know it's the third season. People don't start watching a show in the third season.
Well, and especially...
Not in the numbers you're hoping for.
Just renaming the end of it, which is the part that most people don't even say.
Right?
It's SeaQuest.
Yeah.
Yes, it's SeaQuest DSV and SeaQuest 2032, but it's SeaQuest.
People who are paying attention will know, like, well, that's the third season of the show I wasn't that interested in, and I watched on and off until I stopped. Or people that aren't paying attention are like... Well, that's the spinoff of that show that didn't sound like it was my up my alley, so I didn't try.
Yeah.
I think it makes perfect sense why it didn't revitalize the show and get it to continue through to a complete third season and fourth and fifth and beyond. But boy, imagine a world where it did, though.
Right?
Imagine a world where it did.
I mean, and this is the first show of my life that crushed me with an incomplete ending. This started my bad trend of falling in love with shows that wouldn't make it.
Yeah, we could just pivot this into miracles.
Love miracles.
Is God now here or is God nowhere? Is there a space or not?
I love miracles so much.
It's a very, it's a load-bearing space in the lore of the show.
Uh-huh. Almost human, what's on the other side of that fucking wall? I'll never know. Carl Urban, please tell me. Does he know?
I bet he'd make something up for you.
I'll take it. Just pretend. Pretend for me.
But yeah, I hope people are as excited to follow us along as we are excited to go down this third and final row. Mm-hmm. See what this new world has in store for our old cast and partially new cast, right? Like, what's Lieutenant Fredericks' deal?
What is her deal?
What is her deal? We've hinted a lot about Brody not being long for this show, but he survived. What's going to happen about that?
What is going to happen?
And when? TikTok.
So, as a gift to us, as we start season 3,
yes.
You know what you can do?
Tell them what they can do.
You can go tell a friend.
Yeah.
You can also go tell the world by leaving us a 5-star rating and review wherever mm-hmm. you listen to us.
And if you leave one of those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to read it. You know I'm going to read it. And I'm going to make it sound so good.
He'll do this, like, the sexy radio voice for you.
You can even put in the text like a voice request. I'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will.
Like, what key do you want it written? do you want an impression? Huh?
You can also follow us on Blue Sky. We are there as Whiskers, WSKRS. Mm-hmm, lots of mm-hmm. fun over there. Lots of posts going on.
Mm-hmm.
Come join.
Yeah, it's the number one space to hear people talking about Sequest Online, I think.
Yes.
In the current year, at least.
Yes.
And when we're having a great time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
I think we just got that miracle.